This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Good morning, everyone. Let us get started. My name is Jaime Sepulveda. I'm the director of Global Health Sciences here at UCSF. I would like to give you the warmest welcome and extend my gratitude to you all for being here today. My special thanks to the wonderful set of panelists that we have here today, all of them dear friends and champions of global health. We do have a very full schedule today with one keynote, five panels, three insider conversations, and closing remarks. We will cover a wide range of topics from pandemics to preterm birth, from health metrics to product development, from neglected infectious diseases to essential surgery, from the future of financing in global health to the lessons we can learn from countries such as Rwanda and its successes in improving health. There are many other important global health topics that we could not cover because of time and space today. I'm thinking in particular about non-communicable diseases, injuries, and associated risk factors, all of which are taking a huge toll around the world. And I'm also thinking about what comes after the Millennium Development Goals, MDGs. As you might know, there's a new set of development goals being drafted, the so-called Sustainable Development Goals, SDGs, one of which, SDG 3, will define health priorities from 2015 to 2030, but perhaps that will give us the opportunity to have another symposium next year and cover those issues. So why this symposium? Why now? Five main reasons. One, first, we're celebrating the 10th anniversary of Global Health Sciences created by our dear friend, Haile Dubas. Second, we're celebrating the opening, the inauguration of our new home, the new Global Health and Clinical Sciences building, which was inaugurated just yesterday. Third, because the solid reputation of UCSF in the basic and clinical sciences should be extended to issues of global health and its challenges. So we saw the opportunity for a symposium linked to the special issue of science and science translational medicine on the topic of what's next in global health, to reflect on the scientific challenges and opportunities in global health. And my thanks to Bruce Alberts and Marcia McNaught and Barbara Chesney and Orla Smith for allowing my team to put this special issue of science together. Fourth, we're very fortunate to have Sam Howard as our new chancellor. And he has been supportive of our vision to make the Bay Area a global health hub. Finally, the last reason is that the field of global health is at a crucial inflection point. The next set of global health priorities will be critical to the health and well-being of many millions of people over the coming decades, and we hope this symposium will contribute with good ideas. So, the overarching reflection is this notion of global health in a key transition point. It is important to acknowledge the many successes and lessons from the Millennium Development Goals era. It is also important to understand the disappointments of the MDG Earth, and to anticipate what will be required to address the future challenges in health. We have witnessed in the last 25 years remarkable progress in reducing the major causes of mortality and morbidity around the world. The clearest metric of success is that by 2012, the average life expectancy at birth worldwide had increased to 70 years. That's pretty remarkable. Under 5 mortality decreased from 14% of all live births to in 1970 to 5% in 2010, and the goal is to bring those down to 2% by 2030. A key reason for this success was the formulation of the MDGs and its adoption by the global health community. Now, the beauty of the MDGs was that they were simple, understandable, ambitious, achievable, and measurable goals. So these characteristics made it easier to bring together the political will, financial resources, and scientific leadership to make great progress against the burden of disease. As Margaret Chan mentions in her editorial here, our first challenge is to help reach and surpass the health targets set in the MDG era. One urgent task is to tackle the persistent causes of maternal and neonatal mortality. Only 27 of the 138 lower middle income countries are likely to achieve the MDG-4 target for reducing under 5 mortality. In spite of great progress, 6.3 million children under 5 died in 2013, almost half of whom did so in the first 28 days of life. To me, this is the next critical frontier. The great majority of these deaths could have been prevented, and this is one of the aims of the $100 million grant that we received from Mark and Lynn Benioff and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and we're very grateful for that. As the Sustainable Development Goals are formulated to set the global agenda for the next 15 years, it is vital that health remains a priority for development and that we apply the positive and negative lessons of the recent past to define our future course. The new SDGs contain 17 goals, 169 targets proposed so far, with only one of the goals, SDG 3, focused on health. The current enunciation of SDG 3 is, and I quote, "to ensure healthy lives and promote well-being for all at all ages." Sounds beautiful, but means nothing, really. So we need a quantitative goal and a measurable target. That is why the recent Lancet paper by Norheim, Pito, and some of us here at UCSF proposes a reduction of 40% of premature deaths, meaning those under 70 years of age, by 2030 as a universal and quantifiable goal. And this was inspired by the influential Lancet Commission led by Larry Summerson, Dean Jamieson, Richard Beecham, Gary Yane, and others here at UCSF. So, in conclusion, the goal of this conference is to explore what is coming next in global health so that we can be prepared and so that our scientific efforts can be targeted at the most relevant opportunities. And frankly, this is a fitting role for us at UCSF as one of the top health sciences universities and one whose tagline is advancing health worldwide. Final reflection, what is the role of a university in global health? Universities are where new ideas and new leaders come from. we play a crucial role, clearly, in knowledge creation, replication, and translation. But I do believe we also have a moral imperative in the implementation of that knowledge to improve health and reduce inequities. Again, it is my conviction that a preeminent health sciences university such as UCSF has a unique opportunity to contribute to make the Bay Area a real global health hub. Let me now have the privilege of introducing our new and brilliant Chancellor, Dr. Sam Howard.
Thank you, Jaime. I'll certainly accept the new. I'm not sure about the brilliant, but as probably the only person on the entire day's program that has no particular expertise or background in global health, I'll have the wisdom to keep my comments very short here, and I'll have the privilege of introducing the first keynote speaker. But I would like to take this opportunity to welcome all of you who are here for today's program, particularly those who are not part of the UCSF family, who have traveled long distances to be here to participate in one way or the other in what I think will be an extraordinarily exciting scientific program. Earlier last week, I had the opportunity, actually earlier this week, on Monday afternoon, I had the opportunity to attend the orientation for our incoming students. We are just a health science campus here, so we have professional students in medicine, dentistry, nursing, and pharmacy, and a large graduate program in the life sciences. So I welcome 1,000 students here to UCSF to begin their education, and I know very well that the reason that many of them chose UCSF to come here is because of our Global Health Science program. Students are really focused and passionate about global health sciences, and the stronger our programs are, will make the university itself stronger. So I applaud highly for his vision some 10 years ago when he and maybe two of his best friends boldly created Global Health Sciences here, and I applaud Jaime's leadership in taking the reins from Jaime and building now a program where we have 200 or more faculty affiliated with our Global Health Sciences program. Jaime has been particularly effective in attracting and retaining luminaries in the global health science field, to name just a few: Eric Gooseby, Richard Feacham, George Rutherford, Paul Volverding, Molly Cook, many of whom will speak in today's program, and many, many others. And his most recent pitching and calling in a luminary in global health was to attract our keynote speaker, Harvey Feinberg, who this year, in fact, just earlier in September, began a year as what we call a presidential scholar here at UCSF. And Harvey will greatly enrich our community writ large, but particularly our global health sciences. As you know, he was the former president of the Institute of Medicine, a former provost at Harvard, and former dean of the School of Public Health at Harvard. And Harvey has had a far-reaching impact around the world in many areas, in academic medicine, public policy, public health, and of course, global health. On a more personal note, we created a couple of years ago a Chancellor's National Leadership Council, a small group of people selected from around the country to give advice to the Chancellor, and I enjoyed the wisdom of that group under Sue Desmond Hellmann's leadership, and now very much look forward to continuing to get the wisdom of that group. And Harvey very graciously agreed to join that group and has been of tremendous value to us as UCSF as we chart our future. So please join me in welcoming Harvey Feinberg to the podium to give the first keynote address.
Good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. And Sam, I want to thank you so very much for that very generous introduction. Jaime, it's a thrill to be here to follow, in a sense, in your footsteps, because it was Haile DeBus who brought you to UCSF through this same mechanism. And it's very difficult to bring people here in that mechanism. Sam, you only have to ask, and people want to come. So it's, for me, a really wonderful thrill to be part of this community this academic year, and to have an opportunity to share with you some reflections about the grounding principle for global health, and that is the principle of equity and the place that equity plays in ensuring progress for global health. If the idea of public health is health as it applies to a whole population, then global health is essentially public health where your population of interest is the entire population of the globe. A core principle at the heart of global health is the idea of human equity. But equity has many different meanings as it applies to global health. And we sometimes use it in different ways to mean somewhat different things. For one, we take equity as a core idea of the individual worth of every human being on the planet. And a founding firm grounding for global health is this notion that every human being has a dignity and a worth that is equivalent to every other human being. But equity also applies to matters of social endowment, our income and wealth, the place where we live. It applies to our ability to take advantage of resources to live a fulfilling life. And equity in the sense of social endowment is directly connected to opportunities that we have for health. They may or may not be directly connected to a third meaning of equity, which is our exposures to risk and our choices in life about those matters that affect our health, lifestyle, environment. The things that we can do or that are done to us without sometimes our knowledge or our ability to influence, that nevertheless determine our life chances in health. Most of the time, however, when people talk about equity in global health, they mean more specifically equity as it applies to our access to health care, to equivalent health care. And sometimes we also mean equity as it applies directly to the outcomes of health and to our health status. One of the things that is so important, if we take Jaime's message to heart about the importance of measurement and knowledge and goals, is that when we think about where we are trying to go in global health, that we think clearly and we identify precisely what is our goal in terms of human equity. In the Institute of Medicine, when it talked about the quality of healthcare, it defined six dimensions of quality. It said healthcare to be high quality had to be safe, it had to be effective, it had to be patient-centered and timely. It had to be efficient. And it said it had to be equitable. So from the IOM point of view about what constitutes good quality healthcare, equity was a requirement for good quality care for a population or for an individual. On the other hand, if we want to achieve equity in health, we know that we also have to apply high quality care to every individual in health services in order to make it equitable. So equity is at once a component of quality, and quality is a necessary condition to achieve equity. I would propose that as we look forward to global health sciences in this next decade, that one very important dimension that needs to be continually reflected, analyzed, studied, measured, and reported is the way in which interventions in global health relate directly to equity. because equity does not follow only from advances in care. Equity is not a natural consequence of improvements in technology. Equity, whether we mean it for healthcare or for health or for any of other meanings of equity, itself deserves and must be a direct goal. Now, the idea of equity is very tightly connected to the ideas of fairness and justice and human rights. In the case of rights and equity and rights to health care, the world is highly divergent. If you look, for example, at the constitutions of the world, 86 countries, like the United States, have no constitutional guarantees about a right to health. In fact, if you think about the U.S. Constitution and the rights that it guarantees individuals in the United States, there's a wonderful list in what we call the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments of the Constitution. And they guarantee Americans the right to freedom of speech and freedom of the press, freedom of religion, the right to assemble and to petition the government, and many other enumerated rights. Every one of those rights in the United States enumerated in the Constitution is a civil or a political right. None of them is a social or an economic right. There's nothing in the Constitution to guarantee a right to education. There's nothing in the Constitution to guarantee protection in old age or in sickness. There's nothing in the Constitution about a right to health or health care. Now, it turns out, when Franklin Roosevelt, in 1944, delivered his final State of the Union address in January of that year, at the end of his address, he made a plea for what he called a second Bill of Rights, not one that would necessarily be codified in the Constitution as amendments, but something that the nation would adopt as its policy. He called for a right to a good living wage and a job. He called for a right to housing. He called for a right to education. He called for a right to medical care and the opportunity for good health. The difference between political and civil rights anywhere in the world and a right to health and health care is that, for the most part, all we ask of government to preserve our civil rights and political rights is to refrain from acting. Do not proscribe our freedoms of press, speech, assembly, religion. What is required, however, to protect health and health rights is affirmative action on the part of government to actually deliver on the services and the necessities that enable a population to live healthfully. Now, it turns out the trend in the world is actually in a good direction from a constitutional guarantee point of view toward advancing a recognition of these rights to health. A study that Jody Hyman and her colleagues at UCLA conducted showed that before 1970, of the world's constitutions adopted, only one-third mentioned anything about a right to health or health care. But by the 1970s, it was 60%. And in the 1980s, it was three-quarters. And in the 1990s, it was 94%. And after the year 2000, only one of 33 newly adopted constitutions did not articulate a right to health. So the world is moving to recognize that a right, and therefore equity for health, is increasingly accepted, but not everywhere, and not uniformly. And in fact, if you examine those countries which do better on advancing on health, they do not necessarily correspond to those that have pledged in their constitutions to protect a right to health. As the world has grown economically, economic disparities have increased. A recent study published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences compared, for example, the dispersal of incomes measured by the Gini coefficient over time in China and the United States. And if you look at the U.S., we have gone from a coefficient under 0.4, 0.4 or higher is considered severe adverse distribution, inequity in income. But we went from a measure of about 0.37 in 1980 to about 0.47 plus in 2010, 11, and 12. But China, before it started its great leap forward in 1978, when Deng Xiaoping said it's okay for some areas and some people to get richer first, was a very equitable country. Its Gini coefficient before 1978 was on the order of 0.12, very, very evenly distributed, very little income. Now, the most recent measure is that China's Gini index has gone up to 0.55 or 0.57. Now, what is the challenge for us in global health? It is partly to take the poorest countries and to be equitable in the access to necessities, including health. But it is also to look within every country and to be mindful of the distributions and maldistributions and inequities within every country. Because global health is not only about the other versus us, it's also about our own countries and the health of everyone in the population. When Jonathan Mann was the director of the AIDS program at WHO, the founding director, he worked night and day to bring attention of the world to the problem of AIDS and what it represented, not only in health terms, but in human terms, and what would be required to deal with this growing pandemic. And in that experience, Jonathan came away with a deep conviction that health and human rights were inextricably linked. He went on to found the François-Xavier Bonnieu Center for Health and Human Rights at Harvard, and he wrote consistently about how human rights and health depended on one another. Jonathan once observed that some people say there is no use trying to change the world. But, he asked, if we don't try, will it change? Change is possible if we resolve to make the difference. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.